First of all, dealing with your question about a visit to Israel. If you organize a visit to Israel, just to Israel, we'll be very happy to receive you. We have no problem with that. Just let us know, and if you come just to Israel, you'll be guest of us, and we'll be willing to share with you our opinions and ideas, and to show you everything about Israel.
The ambassador saying just Israel. Did I hear
yes,
correctly?
No? Okay. We have no problem. You will be our guests. As with regard to your question of a ceasefire, we are ready to receive ceasefire, you know, but the other side has to receive it as well and stop shelling us and stop killing us and stop aiming to eliminate us, you know. We have no problem. We had a ceasefire before, and if a ceasefire achieves, you know, and which will not continue the shelling of Hamas towards Israel, we'll consider such a ceasefire, you know. That's what we're aiming to as well. With regard to the passages, and they are open, we are trying to bring humanitarian aid, as we showed, as we explained, since the beginning, and this goes for a long time as well. And with regard to your question of withdrawal from Gaza, when we left Gaza in 2005, we made it very clear that we have no aim to return to that place. We left in order to let the local population to establish their own independent state. What's going on now is an operation to avoid the Hamas from shelling us, and it's operation against military targets of Hamas. The moment we come to the conclusion the Hamas is not going to shell us and the Hamas is going to accept our existence, we are pulling out. You know, there is no reason for us to continue to stay there, and we made it very clear. And we will return to the negotiations with the Palestinian as quick as possible, with the elected Palestinian people, and that's with the president, with Abu Mazen. That's what we did for the last year in a very good way, and we hope that this will return, will be able to return to that situation. If the Egyptians are coming with a new truce suggestion, a new ceasefire suggestion, of course we'll deal with it, we'll check it, and if it's really going to bring quiet back to the region, definitely we'll accept it. You ask me about the final status. The aim of the discussions that we had during the last year between our leaders and the Palestinian leaders was targeting towards the final status of the area and the final status of the situation. And we had very good negotiations. Unfortunately, we have elements who would like to put a stick in the wheel and just to destroy what was achieved till now between us and the Palestinian. I hope that we can resume the discussions and discuss with them the final status of the area. You mentioned resources. No doubt that we are going to share the resources in the region between us and the Palestinians, and discussion in that aspect are going on for a long period, not just during the last year. Resources of water, of many other things, and part of it is already being done between us and the Palestinians, and we hope that when we conclude the discussions, we will be able also to share the natural resources in the area. You asked about walls and settlements. I think that history showed us is that settlements are not an obstacle. When we signed a peace agreement with Egypt, all the settlements that were in the Sinai were removed. And we showed to our civilians, to our population, to the Egyptians, and to the world, that settlements are not obstacles for peace. When we discuss the final status of the region, the issue of the settlements will be discussed, and if settlements will have to be removed, they will be removed. But this is part of the final status negotiations. And I can assure you that they will not be an obstacle, as they were not obstacle in peace negotiations with other parties in the Middle East. You mentioned walls. You know, there is a wall which is divided, and not completely, between Israel and the West Bank. Now, the reason you should ask yourself, why did Israel start to build that wall? It goes back, the fence that we had built, goes back to the years of the Second Intifada, when we had people who came from the other side, suicide bombers, who just crossed the area, and you had been to the area, you saw the distances, how short they are, how easy it is to go from one side to the other, and in order to protect ourselves, we had to build a fence. The majority of the fence is barbed wires, is not walls that you see. In certain parts you see walls, but the majority, 90% of that fence is a regular barbed wire fence. We have no reason to keep that fence. The moment that the situation eases and the moment that there is no threat to our existence from those suicide bombers, that fence will be removed. And this is a temporary measure to prevent terror attacks which comes from the West Bank to Israel. We learned that in the last few years, since the fence was built, the amount of suicide bombers coming to Israel was reduced almost to zero. So it's a certain measure that we had to take in order to protect ourselves. The moment that that threat is not there anymore, the fence will be removed. You spoke about the international media. What we see now from Gaza, there is a complete coverage from the local population. We see it on Al Jazeera, we see it on all the channels. The reason that we don't want, for the time being, the international media to go in is because of one reason: to protect the lives of the journalists, of the foreign journalists. It could have been very easy for us to let them in, and then, God forbid, if they would have been injured or harmed, you know, Israel would have been accused right away of killing the international journalists, because we don't want them to cover what's really going on. So we kill them. So we don't want to face ourselves in a situation where journalists are being killed. This is the only reason, and when the situation changes, we'll consider, and if we can let them in, they will go in. I can tell you that, you know, there are few
situations.
True, but that I agree. You know, what do you do? Do you let them in and then they get killed? You know, this is a decision. It's a dilemma. It's a very big dilemma that we have to face. I agree. It's a big dilemma. It's a big dilemma. You know, they will be able, I think, when the situation eases and when we realize that there is no threat to their life, I hope that they will be able to go in. But you can see that, you know, what happens is there is completely covered. Not only that, you know, we can find ourselves in a situation when the international media goes in and the picture which comes will be much better from our respect. Okay, but still, we are trying to avoid life casualties among those people, and this is the reason we don't allow them to go in. You spoke about economical arrangements. You know, again, this will be part when we discuss the final status of the region. We will try also to discuss different economical arrangements as well. You mentioned the fact that, you know, we would like to push the Palestinian out of that region. You know, this is completely untrue, because what was achieved and what we did since 1993, the Oslo agreements, and the fact that we are talking to the Palestinians, shows that not just that I don't agree completely to what you suggested, but we would like to see the Palestinian living next to us peacefully in their own independent state, in a two-state solution, as I stated before. And that's the goal for the future. If we go to the other questions. You know, I agree with the Palestinian ambassador that it's an old conflict. And it's a difficult conflict. And the question, do I think that the conflict can be solved? I'm absolutely sure that the conflict can be solved, because every conflict has a solution. Every conflict has a solution. And we saw it in the past when we were in a war situation with Egypt for a long time, the biggest and largest Arab country in the world. We were able to achieve a peaceful solution with that country. You always, to achieve a peaceful solution, I always say you need for a tango. You cannot do it by yourself. You need a partner on the other side. And if there is a partner on the other side which agrees to sit down and talk to you and recognize your right to exist, then, you know, peace can be achieved. And I think that we show it to us, and we show it to the world, and we show it to our neighbors that it can be done. And on that aspect, you know, it brings me back to South Africa, because I think that South Africa, with the importance of your country, with the fact that your country has relations with many countries in our region, the fact that you are important not just in the continent, but in other areas, in international organizations and so on, if your country show a more balanced attitude, I'm absolutely sure that South Africa can help us and our neighbors to reach the goal of peace. And therefore, you know, we would like to see involvement and a balanced involvement from your side. It can be helpful. The issue of misproportion in what the Palestinians, what the Hamas are doing, and what Israel is doing. Look, it's a very difficult dilemma when our population is being shelled on a daily basis, the rockets are aiming civilians. What do you do? What choice do you have? To sit down and let it continue? You know, our population cannot, and this is a situation that is lasting for the last 8 years. You know, there is no country in the world which can allow its citizen to live under such circumstances. Impossible. And therefore, you know, we respond the way we respond, and we try, as I explained during my presentation, to lower the amount of casualties as much as possible. Unfortunately, it's a war. It's a war against terror, and civilians are being killed. We have also, I think, to point the blaming fingers and to point the fingers towards Hamas, because Hamas is using the civilian population in a way which is completely contradictory to international law, using them as civilian shield, as a human shield against our activities. And I think we are not to be blamed in that situation, but Hamas is to be blamed. You mentioned the fact that Palestinian ambassador condemned Hamas, that the Hamas didn't, you know, didn't allow or didn't want to get the truce, or didn't allow to continue the truce that was brokered by Egypt 6 months before. Hamas, the whole raison d'etre of the operation of Hamas, what stands behind Hamas, is completely motivated by extreme religious ideas, who is motivated completely by Iran, and it's in coordinates with the Hamas covenant, which calls for the complete destruction of the state of Israel. And this is the reason why Hamas decided this time not to renew the truce and to start and shell us again, with the aim that, you know, Israeli citizens and Israeli civilians will be killed, and the whole area will enter into a chaotic situation. And this was the main aim, and that's very unfortunate. We hope that, you know, Hamas realizes that they cannot continue to behave in such a way, and very soon that they will agree to a ceasefire and they will stop shelling our civilians the way they do. I was asked about the Rafah point. I should, you know, explain that the Rafah passage was part of an agreement that was signed in 2005 after Israel pulled out of Gaza. And according to this agreement, we call it the Border Patrol Agreement, which was signed between Israel, the Egyptians, the Palestinians, and the EU. According to that agreement, European observers were supposed to be in the Rafah crossing point between Egypt and Gaza. But unfortunately, after the coup in 2007, those Europeans, observers who were in the Rafah point, were kicked out by the Hamas militants. And because of that situation, Egypt closed the Rafah passage. Shall the situation return back to normal? Shall the Palestinians will be able to control their territory without the threat of that military organization? I'm sure that those observers will be able to return back to the Rafah passage, and I hope that the Rafah passage will be able to open again. You spoke about the humanitarian issue and about the fact that we are dealing with a small place. True, Gaza is the most condensed, populated area in the world. And for us, when we have to find a solution to the challenge, to the threat that is being opposed against us by those radical militant elements, it's very difficult to respond, because every response civilians can get hurt. And as I said, you know, the Hamas is using them as human shields. We are trying to avoid as much as possible situation that will be hurt. And this brings us to the current situation. The operation is not against the whole area. It's pinpoint targets in areas which we know that the Hamas is hiding, in areas where we know that there is a Hamas infrastructure, and this is how we operate. You mentioned the fact that Gaza is a prison. Gaza is not a prison. Gaza had the chance in 2005 to be the most vibrant country in the region. When we left Gaza in 2005, this was after a long cry of the Palestinians to allow themselves to build an independent state, and we were ready. We pulled out. Unfortunately, certain elements, among them the Hamas elements, came, kicked out the Fatah and the PLO, and they started to control the area on the power of the gun. And because of that, and because of the fact that they are killing their own people, the passages had to be closed. And I just mentioned the fact that Rafah, which is the passage between Egypt and the Gaza Strip, Rafah was closed because of the fact that Hamas themselves kicked the European observers from that passage. Meanwhile, all the other passages between Israel and Gaza were still continued to be operated. Humanitarian aid was still going all the time. Even after Hamas took power into Gaza, aid and humanitarian aid, together with the international organization, went through those passages between Israel and Gaza, and also between Kerem Shalom and Gaza from Egypt. Again, you spoke about the proportion, and I think that I answered that question as well. The question about schools and other civilian places, I mentioned it in my presentation. Unfortunately, Hamas is using those civilian areas as hiding places where the citizens, where the population are, and that, according to the international, is completely prohibited, but Hamas doesn't care about it. So the blame should be on Hamas and not on Israel. I have to mention, as I mentioned before, we have nothing against the Palestinians. We don't want to harm them. If you read the Hamas covenant, the Hamas covenant speaks for the destruction of Israel. And this is what we are dealing with a power that wants to distract us. And we have to fight in order to protect ourselves. We cannot allow a situation where they are calling for our destruction and will stand still. And you mentioned the fact that they have primitive rockets. Let me explain you that a Grad missile, that its capabilities are 70, 80, 100 kilometers, these are not primitive methods. Grad missiles are not being manufactured in Gaza. Grad missiles are being imported from outside. And therefore, we are dealing now with a situation not as was before 2 years ago, that, you know, it's true that they operated on primitive missiles. Now they have much larger capabilities. Capabilities which were being brought into the Gaza, were being brought through the channels from Egypt for the last 2 years. Anti-tank missiles, anti-aircraft missiles, missiles, long-range missiles like Grad, who can reach 100 kilometers within the districts in Israel, within Israel. These are not primitive methods, and this is, you know, when we speak about proportion, this is my question as well. The only way that, you know, the situation can be solved is to try and find a peaceful solution. We agree, as I stated, that both sides should sit together. The Palestinians should return back to the table, and we hope that they do it very quickly, so we can sit with them and discuss the future of the area. I was asked, why is Israel threatened by Iran? I think that question should be referred to Iran. I did nothing to Iran.
Never had, again, unbalanced, lots of accusations, but, you know, I was able to bring Israel's point of view as well.
And any pointers for the South African foreign policy? Do you think you made some strong comments about South African foreign policy?
I expressed my ideas during the meeting, and this was important to explain our stand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.